All right, good evening, everybody, and welcome to Paranormal Connections. I am your host, Christina George, and for the next 2 hours, we are going to be discussing the paranormal. Now, tonight I have a special guest and a good friend of mine. It's Alan Wallace with Off the Chain Paranormal. And many may remember I've had both Alan and some of his team on previous shows. And for those who don't know, I actually have been working with Alan and his team for about, I would say, the last year or so. I've been friends with Alan for a while, and he was working on a documentary about some of the haunted locations around the Arkansas area, and he had asked me if I did remote viewings. And I'd never really, per se, done any remote viewings. All the times that I've usually helped in investigations or consulted, I've always physically been there. But I said I would, give it a try. He asked me, what information I would like about the location, and I said I wanted no information whatsoever about the locations that they were going to be at before they got there. All that I asked for was that Alan provide me with a picture of the location before the investigation, and then so I could see what I could pick up on, and then he would call me once his team arrived at the different locations and did the readings. So we are going to see tonight how accurate was I? How did these investigations go? And, hey, who knows? Maybe I was right, maybe I was wrong. We will see tonight. So with that being said, Alan, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, welcome. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having us back. It's great to be back, and we always just love it when we get to come back on your show. You're the best, you guys are the best, and we just love it. We feel like we're home when we come back on here.
Oh, I appreciate that so much. I mean, we've been friends online for, quite a while, and, I was actually very honored that you had, contacted me and asked me to help you out with, doing the readings, and it went from one, and then it ended up being, a couple more. It was very interesting. This was something new for me. I mean, although I've given, readings to people over the internet or through email, things like this, it was the first time working with a group where I was, actually doing a reading over the phone with the team. So I was kind of, saying, wonder how this is going to go, and but I guess we're going to find out tonight. So first of all, why don't you introduce yourself and just some of the names of the team members that are with us tonight that are going to be on the show.
Okay. My name is Alan Wallace, and I'm the founder of Off the Chain Paranormal, and I founded it with my wife, Janine Wallace. She's here with me, just a few feet from here. We founded Off the Chain Paranormal back in 2012, and we had some initial members that started out, but we had some changing around a little bit here and there, as you do with groups and stuff. And then we had John Sparks join the team. Was one of the first ones to come on board with us here, and he's online tonight. Then we had Chase and Kimberly Hayden come onto the team. Kimberly is not with us tonight. She usually is, but she has to get up at like 3 in the morning to go work. So she decided to go ahead and go into bed and get some needed sleep. And then we have Ray Bertram, who is he started working with us, I guess it's been a couple of years now, maybe. Maybe a little over two, a couple of years. Maybe. And Ray is just he's come on board with film production, and he does a lot of our documentaries, and just does an incredible. He comes on board which I'm a history buff. When we go to locations, I try to brush up on the history. When I get there, Ray just puts me to shame. I mean, he knows everything about it from brick to brick. And then, you know, he transforms into the film and just does an incredible job.
Absolutely. Now, so let's, you know, kind of start out with, so obviously you guys are from Arkansas. What kind of inspired you to decide to kind of take these investigations, take it an extra step, bring Ray into all of this, and decide to do a documentary?
Well, I had already been doing a few documentaries before we met with Ray, and just kind of getting, I love getting into the film work and doing the film part of it. And so every time we do an investigation, I'll usually knock out a documentary on my end, and then Ray will do one as well. And usually his is a lot, much, much better than mine. But when we do the two different ones, you can see all the camera work from our end, and then, of course, the camera work from his. And so we'll have two different kind of views on the same location. Ray and I kind of found each other by accident, but Ray has already been into this game for quite a while. He's been doing the This Is Arkansas film series for quite a while, and he's already well known in the Arkansas area as a filmmaker. And this was kind of a different area for him to get into, and one, you know, that we still have a long ways to go. We're constantly coming up with, him and I, with new ideas and new locations and new twists in the filmmaking. And it's just been, you know, such a joy. And it's, you know, it's just so much fun to get together with all of us and do this.
Absolutely. Now, Ray, I know you're on the line with us, and, you know, how is this for you, you know, working, doing, you know, these documentaries around the Arkansas area? Because you guys went to some really interesting locations. And welcome to the show, by the way. Sorry.
Thanks. I appreciate it. I love being here. You know, I always, when I do This Is Arkansas productions, I would classify that as very traditional, feel-good Americana. And what I do with Off the Chain Paranormal takes that and shows it from the inside out. And to me, it's really fascinating. And of course, I'm kind of an odd bird anyways, because in addition to other things, I'm actually largely blind. I have optic neuropathy, and I have been declared legally blind to the point that I can't even drive anymore. So I actually, they call me the blind filmmaker of Arkansas. And the Arkansas Division of Services for the Blind actually assisted me in getting my editing and production equipment. And so I have gear specially suited for me. So I kind of tend to come in with a little bit of a different angle on things anyways. And it's just a really good meeting of minds and talents with Alan and his crew. Yep. Did I lose y'all?
I'm still here. Did we lose you guys?
I can hear you.
I'm still here.
I can hear you.
Did we lose Christina?
Yeah, we lost Christina. We're going to get her back right now. We're still live, just so y'all can talk, but I think she's in a location that might be challenging.
Please leave your message for...
Yep.
Yeah, let's not give her line, her name, phone number out over the internet. Yeah, she
okay.
Might hurt me.
Yeah,
she might hurt me if that happens. I was thinking when I was listening to y'all talk, I was just in Arkansas and what is that? Springs. What the hell is it called? Damn, it's going right out of my brain now.
Hot Springs.
I was down in Hot Springs. And I was down there for this little crystal conference that Jen was lecturing down there. And while we were in there, there was a little house where the guy had all his crystals set up. So we're all doing the lectures, and he locked it up when we left, you know, because he didn't want anybody going in there. And when we come back, all the crystals had been moved around and made this weird... At first I thought it was a pentagram, but it's not what it was. It was something else. This weird kind of weird star, more like a... six-sided or maybe even seven-sided with this circle that dibbied in and out. It was very strange, but nobody went in the house. The camera showed nothing in the house. It didn't even show anything moving, but yet it had been moved since the time we went in. That was just, I have no idea what it was. It was a paranormal slash spiritual slash extraterrestrial conference. There could have just been a lot of energy there, but it was very strange.
Yeah, well, that's interesting because there's actually a lot of crystals around Hot Springs.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere you drive into the city, you find all these roadside stands selling all kinds of crystals and such.
Hmm.
Well, Al, I'll tell you what, while we're waiting for Christine, I found out something about our next location I can share with you by way of a teaser.
Okay.
Yeah, I was telling
a friend. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead, Dan. Man, I was looking for Christina's number again, and I said something. To finish what you were saying.
No, that's okay. I was just telling Alan. I'm going to tell you all a little teaser. I found out about our next location this Saturday. We're going to an old abandoned schoolhouse way out in the country that was built in the 1920s. And the brush has grown up to where you can't see it from the outside, which has also preserved it on the inside. And I was talking to a friend earlier today who had been there recently, and she said that she had gone all the way through and out the back end of it, and somebody had arranged a circle of rocks, and in the middle of it was an Ouija board just sitting there all by itself. Nobody else was around. So I don't know what we're going to be getting into this Saturday, but it should get interesting.
Oh, jeez.
Hello?
Oh, she's back.
Oh, sorry, guys. Got disconnected for some reason. It wouldn't let me get back in. And when I called, it was sounding all staticky. So not sure what I missed, so I apologize. Where are we at?
Let's see. Ray had just pretty much, right before we lost you, Ray was telling you about his experiences as a filmmaker here in Arkansas right before we lost you.
Gotcha. Okay, great. Now, as far as for you, Alan, so again, I would say it was probably about a year ago when you first contacted me, I guess.
Yeah, it was probably about a year ago, I'd say.
And which was the first look, because we've done three, right? Three?
Yeah, I believe we've done three. So, yeah, the first one I believe we did was the old hospital that we like to go from time to time. They don't like for us to call anything other than the old hospital for publicity purposes. But that was the first one we had done, and that was a good one because I can remember after it was over, you telling me that it took you probably about an hour and a half to digress because there were so many spirits coming at you once we had you on the line there.
Right. Yeah. That was kind of crazy. Now that was TB hospital or something? Or
tuberculosis hospital, yeah.
I'm sorry, wait, did you say something, right?
No, it's not the granted. Yeah, but tragic history there. Around 50,000 people died at that hospital over the course of about 60 years, so there was a lot of activity.
Oh, wow. Now, okay, so when we first decided to kind of do this, you had, approached me, and as I said at the beginning of the show, I really never, I mean, I consult with other teams all the time, but normally I would actually physically be present at the location and do what I do. This was a little, a lot different from what I was used to, and I'm not going to lie, I was a little nervous because although I've given readings, online for people, I didn't know how well I would be able to do it as far as, like, just a location and trying to connect with spirits from a distance like that. And it was interesting. As I said, you know, you asked me what did I want you to give me as far as information on the background or anything, and I didn't want anything for any of these locations, just because I didn't want it to interfere with anything that I may, you know, pick up or have knowledge of. I've never been to Arkansas, so I didn't actually know about any of these places until, you know, after the fact when we were all discussing. So let's kind of go back and let's talk about the first location. And I guess, you know, Alan,
yeah,
can go ahead and kind of just explain how we went about it that night.
Yeah, and this is, on this particular investigation, that's the one I get done. We'll go ahead, you know, let Chase and John tell about their experiences. Because after we talked to you, and we closed camp that night for the investigation, every one of us took home something that night. And, I mean, seriously, I think we all did. We had some soul searching about whether we were wanting to even go back or not. And we've been back since, you know, we have. The place is one of those places that when you go in, you get the vibe immediately. I mean, you know, you can go into, as a paranormal investigator, you go in some places and you don't feel as, you know, you don't have the hair come up and you don't have, you know, the vibe on you. But this place, when you walk into it, you just immediately get that negative vibe, you know, which it feels bad, but you like it as a paranormal investigator. And so, you know, going back a little bit further, you know, when I had on a lot of paranormal investigations, you see the psychic medium actually with the team. They're at the location. They're with them. They see everything, and they're there firsthand. And you know, I had thought, well, why not just give you a call? You know, and of course, you're in Santa Barbara. We're here in Arkansas, and you're in California. We're in Arkansas. So I was thinking, you know, that would be just even stretching it even further, and it'd be possibly more challenging for you. And then, you know, which was something invented that we wanted to try. And and when we called you, we were down in the basement area, which is the morgue area, and that basement is just, you know, the entire building gives you the vibe, but when you go down into the basement, it really just puts the heavy chest on you. And we called you and got you on the line, and you told us quite a bit about the place that we had not told you. You know, the heaviness in the basement. I mean, you told us a lot of different things. One of the things you told us is that when we leave there, go to the third floor, because there had been some children in that area. And so when we left the basement and we went to the third floor, and this was priceless, I'll never get this out of my mind, we had a friend of Ray's with us that night, Jason Malik, and he's also a filmmaker. And when we went up to the third floor, you could hear a baby crying. And when he looked at me and he said, "You gotta be kidding." You know, I mean, he said, "Did you hear that baby cry?" You know, it was just one of those, I wished I'd had that on film, you know. I wished I could have gotten his experience. Because, you know, you had told us if we go to the third floor, then we would, we would probably have some interaction with children. You had sensed that there were some children. And it was spot on. So as we got up there, we heard the baby crying. But to see that look on his face, which I think, you know, when you take someone who's 50-50 as far as skepticism, and then you look at their face and you think, okay, now they're a believer. You know, that was just incredibly priceless. And they said, you know, it was just an incredible night. We all took something home that night. You know, I'm on my off days, when I'm not working, I run a power washing business. And that week, within a couple of days after leaving that place, I had blown two pumps of the motor and just had a horrible week. And I'll let some other team members tell what happened to them and what they felt.
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't we, either of you want to go for it? How about John? We'll go ahead and have John come in.
Hey there. That night, that night was, I mean, every time we've gone there, it's always something different. It's never the same event each time. Some nights are, sometimes it's quiet, sometimes it's whatever, but when we go down to that basement, it's like a whole another level, which I've been there probably 4 or 5 times, and I've pretty much felt something run through me down in the basement before. Felt chills, just something ominous is down there that you just can't explain. But the worst, I thought the worst thing that happened to me down there was I was almost on the third floor. I got scratched on my neck. So the basement is not, you know, the most negative area, but the third floor, I mean, the whole building has got its own mysterious element about it. And we really haven't figured it out yet, and probably never will, but that's just the paranormal for you, and that's what makes it interesting. But every time we go there, it's always interesting. But, that night, that weekend afterwards, I mean, every time throughout the day, I would just feel depressed, just mad at the world, and never really understood it. It probably took about a week before it kind of like lifted off of me to where I actually was back to normal, and I still have yet to understand why, because we've been back since, which we have introduced, you know, we've done a lot more prayers before and after, which has helped, but that same day, though, we were, that whole weekend was just different. Couldn't quite explain it, but I could go on and on about that place, but I'm going to let Chase explain a little more about his experiences.
Sure, Chase. How about, welcome to the show, and so how was it for you when you were out there?
Well, for me, it was a little different because Alan and John, of course, were more experienced than me, and my wife and I are a little bit newer to the team, and I believe that was my either second or third actual investigation. And to go into a place like that, it was something else. My wife actually caught some things look like a shadow person on camera, film. And as far as any experiences, I'd have to say that I agree with them that we all did take something home. Because I noticed, and I talked to them later, it was probably a couple of weeks before things settled down for us. There were times where, you know, all couples maybe fight or get irritated or things like that at each other. But, just getting upset over just some real nonsense, things that would never really bother us. I mean, me specifically, I know things that just never bothered me, just really irritated me. I was moody, just would get angry, just like almost a hatred type of anger. And, you know, it was one of those things I had to really step back and think, okay, what is the deal here? This something has changed. And I actually approached John and Alan. I said, guys, have you been feeling bad? Have you had any changes in, you know, relationships or anything? I said, because, man, the last 2 weeks have been real rough for us, you know. And they're like, well, yeah, you know, now that you mention it, it has been kind of that way. And we talked about it and just seemed to be kind of unusual and just a lot more negativity. And of course, with that, kind of come up with our own game plans as far as clearing our homes and saying prayer, things like that. And it seemed to really lift away after that. But, it was certainly something taken away from there that it was a real bad energy.
Right. Joe, I know you're listening in the background. Ray somehow got dropped, so I need you to please call him and add him back into the call. Well, it was interesting, yeah, because I'll tell you, even after I had done it, like Alan was saying, I had such a hard time just kind of bouncing back from that. I literally it was just so draining. It literally took a couple days to kind of, and I didn't even do the investigating there. I was just, doing the reading, and that's it.
Yeah, well, too, when you called after that call, you actually seemed to be a bit of a catalyst. I don't know if it was these things could sense what you could do or what, but after that, everything, it just seemed like everything came right at us, and it was just like, wow, it just everything picked up.
Go ahead. Chase, Ray, are you back?
Yeah, I am.
All right, welcome back. Okay, so somebody was saying something before that cut off.
This is Alan. It was just like Chase was saying, that you were like a catalyst. And once we got you on the phone, my wife was telling me too about it, that her impression was, once we got you on the phone, the whole atmosphere in that basement changed. It was like they were just jockeying for position. They knew we had you on the line, and it was just, like they were just the pressure, the feeling of the basement, the whole atmosphere just got more intense. Like they just really just who you were, and I don't know how to explain. Just more intense.
I'm not sure what we have in the background, but for anybody who's not talking, you guys can mute your phone, bro, you're not talking, that'd be great, because we'll pick up everything on these microphones. What was interesting is there was a lot of interaction there. I mean, for sure. I mean, I don't know what that background noise is.
Yeah, I hear it too.
All right, well, it sounds like a stop now. There was so many different spirits there, and it seemed like, they were all trying to compete for the attention. And I remember I'm sorry, guys, but anybody who's not talking, I need you guys to mute your phones, because I'm not sure where we're getting that from. Joe,
is it me?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure who it is.
Did it start when I came back in?
It
kind of went away now.
Yeah, it went away now, so I guess we'll just kind of see how it goes. I remember when we were, there, the children were, it was a big thing, because it was kind of like they were competing for my attention, and that was, one of the things is that, although everybody, thought the morgue would be a great place for activity, and it was, but, the kids kept telling me, for you to go, if you really wanted activity, and some interaction, to go up to the third floor, and, which you guys did. Now, I gave a lot of information. What were some of the other things that you guys were able to confirm that night of things that I gave you?
Are you still there? Hello?
Yes, I'm there. Can you hear me?
I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah, so what were some of the other things that you can remember that I picked up on that you were able to confirm or validate through the night?
There was a pentagram on the wall down there on the basement, and I believe you had made a reference to that, and you had no knowledge of that, from what I understand. But there was a pentagram or something on the wall down there. And I was trying to think of some, but I mean, you were spot on many of the places that night it was, like I said, just once we got you on the line, it was off the chain, just. it really was.
Well, I remember, like, we were I was getting information, and I remember you guys were asking, like, for names as well. I think that we were able to, I was able to pull up some names, and you guys, didn't you get some confirmation of that, those as well?
That's a different.
Oh, is that, that was a, the second one, maybe?
Yeah, okay, that was, yeah, that, I think what you're talking about there was the mass, the, was our next investigation with you, because it was at the mass graveyard in Little Rock.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Now, when you went up onto the third floor at, you know, at the first site at the hospital, now, what kind of interaction were you getting there? What kind of responses were you getting up there?
Seemed like we were getting a female quite a bit, that she was very sad that she was trying to communicate with her child. So that's when we heard the female was trying to communicate with her child, and that's when we heard the baby. And at that point, yeah. And so that went on for quite a while, back and forth.
I mean, that place, I'll tell you, is, I mean, interesting. I mean, for it to be so, I can only imagine what it would be like being there in person and, you know, doing the investigation, because even from doing it, you know, from afar, I was, like, just drained beyond belief. It was, and I think for the first time doing it as well, I mean, there was the pressure. I was nervous. You know, I was like, oh, my gosh, you know, hopefully the information I get, you know, they're able to validate and confirm, because otherwise, you know, they'll never use me again, and maybe I'll never try to do remote viewing again. But for the most part, you know, I would say, well, I mean, you guys ended up doing the rest of the investigation, but did you think that the majority of the information that I was able to obtain and give to you guys was able to be validated in one way or another?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And, you know, not just from that location, but every location that we've used you on, like I said, you've known next to nothing about the location. And then you know, just within a few minutes of talking with you, I mean, you were telling us things that we knew or just had learned, and you were telling us over the phone.
You there? Did we start again?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. So, now, all right, so that was the first location. Now, where else did you guys investigate in the hospital? I mean, other than the morgue and the third floor. I mean, it seems like a pretty huge place.
Very large place.
Yeah. I'll go ahead, Chase, just let you guys tell us where else we went through there.
Basically, we kind of touched base everywhere. Everywhere we could get to anyway and be safe still and so forth. It's a lot of ground to cover. You know, a lot of times we'd split up. But we pretty much tried to take on the whole thing. There was actually one part, I think, there's one hallway in the basement that we'd gone through briefly. We didn't really deeply investigate, but when we came back the second time, we investigated, and some interesting things happened. But for the most part, we try to cover every area that we can.
Absolutely. Now, what would you say at that location, you know, did you have a significant personal experience or anything like evidence that you captured yourself while you were there?
As far as personal experience, yes, I had a personal experience, but unfortunately it affected the ability to capture evidence because of we all carry voice recorders, and we had gone, this next time we had gone, well, we were in the basement going through, and a lightning storm happened to come through, and when that happened, the activity seemed to just intensify. We were getting hits on the K2 meter, which the electricity in the air,
you know, that could have had something to do with it. The thing is, we were asking questions, we were doing things, and we were getting constant feedback to our questions. But one experience in particular is we'd gone back to all the way to the end of the basement. Well, the team kind of split up from there, and everybody else went back down and went upstairs. My wife and I decided to go ahead, and there was just a little bit left in the basement, to go ahead and stay down there and see what we could find. Well, and again, our recorders are on. As far as we know, they're working the whole time. You know, everything's going okay. Well, as we're, everybody's gone upstairs, well, then we hit the end of the hall, and okay, well, we'll turn around and come back. As we're coming back through, I heard kind of a voice like a, I can't tell if it was a help or a hello. I think it was a hello. And it sounded like he was in the next room. And, you know, like most people describe like a whisper or a real low voice. Well, that's what I heard. But then when we went to the next room, because I asked Mom, I said, did you hear that? She said, well, I think I heard something. So we went through there and looking around and started talking. Is there anybody in here? Can you repeat what you said? And about that time, this voice again said hello, but it wasn't a whisper. It was so loud it actually echoed in the room, and it was like actually because you know you're really listening intently. It was so loud it actually startled us. I know it startled me.
Oh wow!
Because it was just like, oh, you know, you're not expecting to hear, you know, that loud a volume. And so immediately, of course, we're taking pictures and so forth, and we start asking more questions and getting more responses. We made our way up. And to double-check ourselves, you know, we looked around, made sure there was no other team members or even somebody else messing around. Nobody else was in the basement. And again, this was at one in the basement where we have to go all the way to the other end. That's quite a long ways. And then go upstairs to get back up to the other floors. Well, we came and started talking to everybody. I said, you know, has anybody been down there or anything? Because they'd already been upstairs for a few minutes. And everybody's like, no, we're actually up here in the conference room, and for the any noise to have traveled that far, it would have been super, super loud, because it was just like a person standing right there and yelling hello in my ear. It was that loud. What the weird thing is, you know, of course, we were excited to get home, start checking their evidence and everything, and again, as far as we had known, you know, we didn't touch anything, didn't do anything, but it was real weird, from the time that we went to the basement, we were taking pictures, taking voice recordings, well, from the time we split up to the time we get back upstairs, our voice recorders no longer worked. And every time we take pictures, you can pretty well tell how the investigation went. You can tell, okay, because everything's in order, like, okay, this is where we were, and this is the time, and this is the place. But again, even though we were taking pictures down there, none of those pictures showed up. It was from when we were down there with the team, and we split up, and then the pictures don't show back up till we go upstairs. And we were taking pictures like crazy, and like I said, we hadn't messed with our recorders, so it was like whatever was there that shut everything down, or sometimes, or kind of like blocked us from taking pictures or something. Which, in some research I've done, that does happen occasionally. They say that can actually be evidence itself of something paranormal, the fact that people's instruments stop working or stop working properly, or you look at pictures and they're blank, or you look and for whatever reason there's nothing there. And it tears me up, because I mean, this voice was so loud, I couldn't believe it. It tears me up, though, that I couldn't catch it. But that's one of those things. I'd say that's probably the most... I guess that's probably the best experience I've had there.
Wow. John, what about you?
That place, I've pretty much had probably the one time I've gotten scratched there was the most personal thing that's happened to me, because our team member that's no longer with us was there with us, and I do believe it was on the third floor, but she just heard a growl. So I was like, okay, show me where the growl was. We walked over to that area, and she said, I heard it in this doorway. So I went over there and stood there. I stood there for a while, didn't hear nothing, really didn't feel nothing different. Alan and a few other guests that we had with us was standing to my right behind us. So I didn't really feel bad. And all of a sudden I just felt a burn. It's like somebody was sticking almost like a cigarette up to my neck. It was just getting closer. You could feel the heat intensify. So I was like, okay, well, you know, I kind of adjusted everything, make sure nothing was touching my skin. Because I wasn't wearing a jacket. I wasn't really wearing a necklace. And all of a sudden it got to the point where I was like, no, somebody's got to look at this. So I turned over. I didn't even touch it. Lost a picture. And sure enough, you can see a red mark. And I had not ever touched my neck at all. There was no bugs around. There was nothing. Just all of a sudden, it just a burn. And then you see a good, I'll say probably 2-inch scratch on my neck. And I had no idea where it come from.
But oh, then, wow.
I don't know how to explain it, but that's the way I can.
Oh, wow. Now, Ray, I know you were there as well and, doing your camera work. What, did you have any personal experiences yourself that night?
Well, we had massive battery drain every time we turned around. You know, we would stick new batteries and cameras and put them on and they'd be dead. So it was kind of crazy. That, I guess we ended up with about an hour long documentary out of that. And, you know, if folks want to go to, YouTube and look at our This Is Arkansas page on YouTube, where you can type in the blind filmmaker of Arkansas and, you'll find that documentary. The hospital, the history behind the hospital was just, that by itself is enough to blow you away. It was literally the largest tuberculosis sanitarium in the United States, located in Arkansas, and the building that we were in was built back in the 1930s, named after an Arkansan senator who himself died from tuberculosis before it was completed. You know, so there's just a huge amount of history behind this one. I really felt like it played into what we were doing.
And so, I mean, and personally, I mean, what kind of experiences were you having there?
You know, the longer and the more often I'm working with off-the-chain paranormal, the more interesting things are happening to me on a personal level. I haven't really talked to Alan or the team about this, but with my optic neuropathy, it's not like traditional blindness. It's not like things are blurry. It's shattered vision. It's like looking through a multifaceted stained glass window with two-thirds of the pain's gone, and you have to put together what you're seeing every time you look at something. And it's just more and more I'm finding myself having to look at things twice. Because, it's like I look at something and that can't be right. I'll see a figure or a shape, and I'll blink and focus again, and it's gone. And things like that are happening more often. Ever since the hospital, though, I've had one particular piece of equipment, and this kind of might seem minor, but it happens all the time now. It has a knob on it that is not supposed to come off, and I have learned that whenever I'm not using that piece of equipment, I have to take that knob off and put it in a place where I know it's at, or else it's gone. You know, I'll put the equipment up, and I'll bring it back out, and that knob's not there anymore. I have to hunt it down. So I'm getting a lot of weird stuff like that happen.
That's interesting. Now, so it seems like, Alan, like, as you said, after you guys left from this location, it seemed like everybody walked away with either a personal experience or something that continued after. It seems like it kind of triggered stuff to start happening.
Yeah, it sure did. You know, and it was a long time before we went back, because we just wanted to kind of let it settle and just kind of do some other locations. And, you know, but we Chase and I and John and my wife and, you know, Kimberly, we really talked among ourselves back and forth, you know, after we had so much negativity, in our heart of hearts, we knew we were going to go back. You're a paranormal investigator, so you're not going to run from it, and you're not going to let it beat you. But we wanted to give it some time, and we gave it probably a year, maybe close to a year. And then we went back, saddled the horse again. And but we went up there with a little trepidation, I mean, on all of our parts. And the second time, when we went back there that last time, everything was different. It was not like it was before. And I was really wanting to call you from that area that night, but I decided, well, let's just go ahead and do a regular investigation, not call Christina tonight, and give you a break on the Saturday night, and just see. And everything went. We had some stuff happen. We had some really, you know, some stuff happen. But we said an entrance prayer, and we said an exit prayer, which we make sure we do now. And a lot of us wear, you know, necklaces with crosses with the body of Christ on it. And we've taken some serious precautions in that area. And, you know, like I said, we're going to be going back at least maybe once or twice this year up to that location. And we're going to be very, very careful, you know, before we enter and when we exit. Like I said, you know, it's the paranormal. And, you know, we haven't found a place yet we're going to say this has beaten us or going to beat us. I'm not saying that couldn't happen sometime down in the future. There'll always be a place out there that we just don't know about that could be hell on earth. It's different, and it's different every time you go back. The atmosphere will be different. It could either be where you don't feel that vibe as much, or it's just, you know, real, real strong. So, it was work for the books for sure.
Well, definitely, it was one, I guess, that I'll never forget for sure. Now, let's kind of go and talk about the second location that we worked together on, you guys did.
That was in Little Rock at the Mass Graveyard. That was a location that Ray had done an in-depth documentary on. It was the former site of the, I'll turn this over to Ray and let him go ahead and give you the history lowdown on it. But it was the former site of the Arkansas Insane Asylum. And I'll just go ahead and let Ray go ahead from here and give you the history of that.
Yeah, I tell you what, it's a sad, tragic history, too. The Arkansas State Legislature around, I think in the 1870s, passed a bill for the formation of what was going to be the Arkansas Lunatic Asylum, which was then completed in the 1780s, and that was literally its name. It was called the Arkansas Lunatic Asylum. It was a Kirkbride facility by the design pioneered by Thomas Kirkbride, and those are the Gothic ones that look kind of like if you see the old asylums from the air, they almost look like bat wings going out. You know, I mean, it was just a classic lunatic asylum, Victorian age lunatic asylum, just like you would see in a movie. And over the years, its name was changed multiple times. It became the Arkansas State Hospital for Nervous Diseases around 1911. I think 1935, its name was changed to the Arkansas State Hospital, which it still is today. At its height, this asylum, the psychiatric hospital, had thousands of patients, 2,000-3,000 patients at a time. And back then, well, today the average psychiatric facility stays only 3 days. Back then, if you were committed to an asylum, you stayed the rest of your life. And I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I'm saying, but, yeah, I was agreeing with you for sure.
Yeah, a lot of people would be committed as children or young adults, and they would stay there their entire lives, 50, 60, 70 years, and they would die there, and by the time they died, either their family had also died off around them, or they had been completely forgotten. So when they died, there was no one to claim the body. So what they would do, they would have to bury the patients on the grounds of the asylum. And by the time the asylum, by the time that facility, the hospital is still in Little Rock. It's in a different place now. It's a new facility. By the time the Arkansas State Hospital that had been built in the 1780s was closed and demolished in 1962, I think, they're estimating between 4 and 5,000 unclaimed patients had been buried there. You know, these were the most tortured of souls. I mean, if you see the documentary that was produced around this, it brings it out. But you're talking about treatment methods that were insane by themselves, with people who frequently weren't insane at all. They might have epilepsy. They might have dementia. Women going through menopause were frequently committed to insane asylums. Husbands could simply commit their wives if they were tired of them for whatever reason. So, I mean, you really had the ultimate warehouse for society going on. And when they demolished the hospital in order to make way for other projects, they moved all of these graves that they could find, and mind you, a lot of them had been there for nearly 100 years, so they had decayed to almost non-existent. But they moved them all to a field which was then outside of Little Rock. Well, it stayed there for 20 years, and the city caught up with it, and they built I-430 around Little Rock. And when they did that, they had to move half of those graves a second time. You know, so you're talking about people who knew no rest in life and have known no rest in death. You know, so we, in order to find the field, we had to work really hard because there was no address for it. All the research that I did, all that I could find, were the longitude and latitude coordinates. So that's how we found it. And, we got there. There's a monument still there for the some 2,500 remains that are supposed to be buried there. There's a monument that they built and established in the 1970s, and you'll see that in the documentary on it. And ironically, the final years of the asylum, they did a lot of work with the criminally insane, which is something you brought up in your reading, which was very accurate. And the Arkansas State Police Crime Lab is right across the street from the cemetery, the mass grave. So, you know, there's so much history going on. And the entire time, I was so happy that we were able to get the entirety of your reading in this film, because everything you said was just spot on. And as you are giving the reading in the film, I was able to do research and get accurate historical images from the time periods that you were talking about, showing what you described, which you could not have known where you were. It was really spot on.
Oh, wow. That's interesting to know, because I didn't even really realize it was that spot on.
You can literally watch this documentary, and as you are giving your reading, I was able to go back in time and give the exact pictures of what you were talking about. It was really spot on.
Wow. Well, that was really interesting. Now, is that the one where I was seeing all of the patients, like, no, that was the third place, right, where I was seeing all the patients wandering around?
This is that. This is the same one.
Okay.
This is the one where you saw women wearing outdated, long white gowns, and I did research, and you described to a T the asylum nurses' uniforms back in the 1880s. And I was able to find documentation of that, included it in that portion of the video as you were giving the reading. You know, this was when Alan, you'll remember this with John, this blew us away, when you said the name Robert was one of the more dominant spirit entities, and standing 50 feet away, almost out of earshot, John had the ovulus. And at the very same time you said Robert, it did too. You know, and
yeah.
that was powerful.
You know, it was John was walking around with the ovulus. He was a good ways away from us. And we had all kinds of, it was a cool night, the wind was blowing, it was cold. We had the freeway system there, so there were ambulances, there were cars, there was traffic. Well, there was no way John heard the conversation. I was actually having to keep the phone close to my ear when I was talking to Christine because of all the audio contamination. So John did not hear the conversation. And so when I asked you, Christine, I said, do you feel one spirit here that is the most sinister or the most evil? And he said, yeah, I feel there's one out there, and his name is Robert. And just shortly after that, John walks up, not knowing what we had said, and the ovulus just said, Robert. Of course, and all of our hair blew back at that point, and you know that was incredible.
You can't manipulate that. I mean, that was 100% authentic.
Yeah, I mean, it blows me away too because again, I always tell anybody I work with, I don't want any information on where they're going to be investigating at. Since it was going to be far away, all I asked for was, a picture of either the inside or the outside, wherever you guys were going to be at, and just see what I could get. And, I remember just viewing it when you guys were there, and, I was just seeing all these people. Now, mind you, I didn't know what this was. I was just kind of seeing these people that were wandering, and I remember saying something like, oh my gosh, like they're just everywhere, like everybody's just kind of like wandering around like they're crazy, like they're talking to themselves, some people are walking in circles, some people are like jittery and talking to themselves. I mean, it was really weird. And then you guys of course, as we went on and gave me the information afterwards, even for me it blows me away, when I get the information, because the information never makes any sense to me, really, unless I'm interacting directly with, a person. And then the problem with trying to interact with these patients is that they mentally weren't all there. And so, it was overwhelming. It was really kind of sad in a way, because you just saw, so many people just kind of wandering around. They were just everywhere.
This
really had to be one of the most tragic places in the entire state of Arkansas. And to me, one of the bizarre things about it, you have this mass grave of thousands of unclaimed mental patients dating back nearly 100 years, and within earshot is, and this was the noise contamination Alan was talking about, within earshot was I-430, which is a 6-8-lane beltway going around Little Rock. So you literally have tens of thousands of people going right by this location, separated by a hedge. They can't see it, but you can hear it. Nobody knows it's there. It's just, that's just always stricken me as so sad that these people have been so completely forgotten. But they were definitely remembered that evening. For me, it was just a pleasure, and it was kind of an honor to produce this particular documentary, just because I felt like we all felt like these people's story needed to be told.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because, I mean, again, a lot of people that were put in these places did never come, you know, never were out in the free world again. I mean, it was like you were being put in prison and you be there, you might die there. And so their stories really aren't ever told. I mean, they're like the forgotten ones. You know, they're even forgotten a lot of times by their own families. So I love the fact that, you know, you put together something like this in their honor and memory. It was amazing to me.
Well, I just, of all the documentaries I've done and all the films that Blind Man's Bluff has done with Off the Chain Paranormal, this is my favorite thus far, just for those reasons. Now, the one that we're doing around the, our visit to the old steakhouse in Little Rock, I'm in the process of producing that one, and that's going to be really good too. I'm excited about that one.
And which location was that?
I'll let you tell about that one.
The old steakhouse was the one we just recently done with you, the last investigation when we called you from.
Right.
We were in Little Rock, and that was we've been working on that one for a while, trying to get in there. You know, they don't just let anybody in, and so we were very honored to be able to come in there and investigate that place. And there again, that was another location you knew nothing about, and we, you know, I just kind of pretty much called you from the cuff and just you just began, you know, when we were, I'll tell you, we were actually, when I called you, we were actually in the legislature room, and I had called you, and we got you online, and we had quite a few people there, quite a few of the employees and the tour guides and stuff like that were there that night. And so they stuck around after hours to just kind of watch the investigation. And so we got you on the phone, and there again, you knew basically nothing about the location or what had happened. And immediately, one of the things that you hit, you started telling us about this, you hit on, was that there was a person that was not being acknowledged. He was upset because he had not been acknowledged. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that now. I couldn't then. What had happened there was hang on just a second. I'll pull it up. I've got it on my computer here.
I got it in my head what you're talking about. That's, there was a actual slaying in the legislative chamber. There was two senators got to an argument that became a physical altercation, and one of them actually stabbed the other one and killed him on the spot in the legislative room where we were standing. And the reason this got really interesting with your reading is because while the one senator was killed, he was the one that actually died, who became famous for having been murdered, the other senator, even though he lived, his life was basically over at that point. He was never able to work again. He never had any reputation. And he spent the rest of his life in abject misery and ended up dying penniless. And so he just had a really miserable life. And the name, Alan, if I'm remembering right, the name that Christina called was actually the one that lived and eventually died. It was kind of like he did not die there on the floor, but for all practical purposes, that's where his life ended, and that's where he was stuck. Everybody talked about the guy that got killed. Nobody talked about him. So I think I'm remembering that right.
Yeah, I believe you're right. It was Speaker of the House Don Wilson who killed Representative J.J. Anthony. And what Christina did not know at that time that she was telling us, we actually did, we had only found out about this just a little bit before we called you, Christina, was that several years, we found this out from one of the workers there, that several years before there had been another paranormal group investigate there, and they had felt through their investigation that it wasn't the one who was killed that wanted to be recognized. It was actually the murderer. And when you were, when you were telling us on the phone, you said, "Let me stop you there." I was telling you where we were at a little bit, and you said, "Let me stop you there." You said, "There's a man who wants to be acknowledged who hasn't been." And actually, it's like Ray says, it's usually the murder victim who gets all the attention, but in this case, it was the murderer who was wanting the acknowledgement.
Right, and I remember that I picked up on the fact that they both stayed on separate sides of the building.
Absolutely, yeah.
They had like their own area, so you know, to not cross into each other's pathways. You know, that was interesting. Again, when I get this information, you know, I just kind of blurt it out. And as you said, sometimes, you know, when you're talking, something would come through and I'd have to, you know, like, oh, stop, you know, they're wanting this to be acknowledged. I remember one of the cases, and I don't remember which one it was at, you had some people with you, and I was getting that, I asked if there was additional women, some brunettes, and had they done protection, because I felt that they had it, they needed to, and that this particular spirit had an attraction to brunettes, and I felt like one of them was going to have some interaction that night because of it. And then I guess you told me, Alan, afterwards that, yes, you did have a group of ladies with you, and you guys always do your protection, but they didn't feel like they needed to that night.
That was at the mass graveyard investigation. We were investigating with the Batesville Entity Seekers, and one of their team members was exactly. I mean, I think from who you were talking about. You were. That was another time you were spot on there, and she had not taken any protection and didn't really feel the need to. Yeah, I really wanted to interact with Robert or spirit, but more than take the protection. That was at the Met graveyard investigation.
And again, I didn't know that you were going to have these of the, you know, the other team members with you from this other group. I just knew that you guys were going to be there, so that's why I said, you know, is there somebody new with you or extra with you, you know, there, because I was picking up on women that I didn't recognize from your team. So, I mean, I have to say, hearing all this and going, you know, over everything, you know, after the fact, and the fact that, you know, you guys were able to get validation through not only personal experiences, but your research and, you know, the evidence that you guys collected to be able to validate that, to me, is amazing. I mean, it's so good to know that it was accurate, you know, and because you never, you know, like I said, the information to me that's given, it never makes any sense to me. So all I can do is give it and hope that, you know, people can... It'll, you know, resonate with them, or we'll be able to, you know, research and be able to match stuff up and check stuff off. So I guess I didn't do too bad for three.
Well, not at all. As usual, you respond. You know.
Well, and two, the more that we do it, the stronger. And this is just from my perspective. I'm kind of on the outside looking in some ways. I just. I see the work, Christina, that you're doing with Off the Chain, strengthening and picking up more each time, as I guess you and the group are forming a stronger and stronger connection that lets you, maybe you yourself, have a deeper presence on the scene, because just each time is just, it seems to be that much stronger. You know, I tell Alan, I'm always excited for the next time. It's just really as good as it is. It just keeps picking up.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chrissy.
No, go ahead. No. Go ahead.
I was going to let John and Chase touch on this next one that happened a little bit later on that night. Chase had actually brought in. This was the first investigation that we got to use thermal imaging on, and so Chase and Kimberly had brought in some thermal imaging equipment, and we were able to use that upstairs. And I'll set this up, and I'll let Chase tell some more about it. But what we had done up there, upstairs, they had a death mask made of a serial killer that was put to death by the state of Arkansas by electrocution. And his name was James Wayburn Hall. He was born in 1921. He was executed in 1926. He had many names. Well, one of them was the Butcher. He was the Hitchhiker Killer. He had actually killed about four people, one of them including his wife. And what was interesting about this particular incident, and we're going to have this in the documentary, we're going to have Chase's thermal imaging in there too. They, right at the moment of his death, they made a face mask, a death mask, which they do a lot of times. They made a death mask. Master Cats, there you go, and of his face right at the moment of death, which, you know, I just assumed, we were all pretty sure that there was going to be some strong residual energy in that. So John and Chase and I and all the team, well, and Ray and everybody, we went up to that level, and I'll just kind of turn it over to John and Chase, because John, I think, had the Oculus, and Chase was using the thermal. And we were right there at that death mask. I'll just kind of turn it over and let them tell their story about what happened there.
Chase, you take it, because I wasn't there at that time.
Okay. That was kind of an interesting experience. Certainly wasn't anything that I was, we were looking forward to it, but it wasn't anything that I was prepared for, just the fact that, you know, we've been talking about other entities and so forth. And when we came to the death mask, I should also mention, by the death mask, there was an instrument there that they used to call Old Sparky, and what it was basically used as kind of a torture device for inmates. And so I'm sure there was some energy off of that, you know, a lot of the negativity, a lot of the use that it had gotten over the years and so forth. But when we walked up there, you know, we just started asking some questions, try to kind of open a dialogue just to see if we'd get any response. And it was really weird. It was almost like a light switch. When I had a K2 meter and Alan had a K2 meter, and in the display, we set them on either side of the display. And before that, I'd kind of took some readings, made sure there was no electrical fields or anything that were going to interfere with us. And I forget what question it was that we asked, but Alan asked, and immediately both our K2 meters went off the chart. And then from there, for, I'm going to say, a good half hour or so, we were getting feedback on the Ovilus. We were getting feedback on some different instruments that we had. It was like the killer was there and was actually trying to interact with us. But it was also, but it was odd, because some of the responses we would get, because as we were going through, some of the staff that was working there, they were all on Googling things and trying to find something. Now, a lot of them had quite a bit of knowledge about this, but there was still some things that even they had questions about. So as they were Googling, you know, one of the things they mentioned was that,
that, the, you know, even though this man was a killer and was pretty cold-blooded about it, that while he was in prison, he would joke with the officers and was actually well-liked by the officers because he did cause them a lot of problems, and he would always joke and always kind of be in a good mood and was cheerful, and a lot of the responses we were getting kind of fit that description. There was one question we'd asked him if he knew a certain person, and the response we got was, oh, God, no. You know, and that just seems a little too human, just because of the way it was presented. That just doesn't seem very mechanical to me, or something that a machine would just generate.
Right.
But that was a pretty good experience there. And then again, like a light switch, you know, by the end of it, it just turned off. I'm like, okay, I'm done with you. And that was it. The one, I'd say, lull we had while we were talking to it is John had walked up. For whatever reason, the thing didn't seem to like John very much.
I walked up, it quit, so I walked away, and it started back. I was like, okay, I'm done.
he walked up, and the thing just shut down. It was like, okay. And then we started to get it to come back to us a little bit. And we tried several things, you know. We tried, of course, maybe trying to joke with it a more. Then we tried giving it commands as an officer would an inmate, just several things. And really through the whole broad spectrum, we seemed to get feedback.
I'll tell you what, let me tell you one little other piece of history around this that's interesting, is the warden at the prison where this guy was executed, this was actually a practice of his. Whenever they executed something, they would get a plaster mold of the prisoner's face that had been executed right after he was put to death. And the warden actually had all of these hanging on his wall like trophies. So of all of the death masks hanging on the warden's office wall, I guess this was the most famous one who had been put to death. So it was this mask that was put into the museum, but it was one of a collection of these masks. You know, so the killer was evil, but, you know, in my book, what the warden did was kind of evil, too, as far as getting these masks and hanging them on his wall, you know. So I had wondered if perhaps a little bit of that had rubbed off on it paranormally as well. You know, you're just talking about a real hot spot paranormally, probably on a couple of different levels.
Right. And, you know, that just, like, creepy anyway. I mean, that's like something out of, like, a scary movie.
Oh, yeah, that would make a great... I was thinking about that, too, today. That would make a great scary movie.
We
just saw that in Hollywood.
You know, Christina, that midnight, we were all downstairs, and I asked the my wife and Kimberly... and then Ray was, you know, if Ray would go ahead and film them, if I'd go back up to the, there was a, they had one room up there that was the gown room where it was the former first ladies of Arkansas, the former, first ladies, all married to the governor, former governors and everything. Their gowns are displayed in this gown room. And all of the people who work there always claim that when they went into the gown room, a lot of them had paranormal experiences in there. The doors would slam, the doors would open, they'd hear things, they'd feel things, they were touched, pushed, all kind of stuff like that. Well, my wife Janine and Kimberly had gone up there. I just wanted to see if, you know, if them just being alone in that room, with the exception of Ray, would spark anything. And so they were up there for quite a while. I'd say they had been gone for about an hour or so. And so I was talking with Chase and John, and I said, well, let's go ahead and go on up to the death mask, and I'll go on up and I'll get the girls and head on up that way. So when I did, unbeknownst to me, they had already left the gown room and then went to the legislature room. And so when I heard down room, I was by myself. I wasn't at that moment in an investigative mode. I was just looking for my team, my wife, my team members. And so when I entered the down room, there was no one in there. It was totally dark. And when I started making the big circle around the down room, I heard this big bang, this big something around the other side, on the other side of the down room. I'm like, wait a minute. Hold on here. They're not even in here. They were downstairs, you know. So it caught me at a moment of vulnerability where I wasn't even investigating. I was looking for them, and then at that moment, it was like, boom, you know, had gotten. It snuck up on me. But
yeah, that's kind of crazy. Now, of the locations that you guys have done, for each one of you, what would you say is your favorite location so far? And, Alan, you can go ahead and start, and we'll just go from there. We'll do Alan, then we'll do Ray, then John, and then Chase.
Oh, wow. Definitely the old hospital is I don't know if I could pin it down to one. I'd say definitely the old hospital is definitely one of them. And the Rialto Theater in Morrilton is another one that I love to go to. It never disappoints. That was the location that we went to that one night where I tried to get a hold of you, and everything just went wrong. Couldn't do it. But those are the two locations that are my favorites that I love to go through time and time again. And I'll go ahead and let Ray give it from now.
Well, I liked the lunatic asylum mass grave appealed to me on a personal level the most, just because of the nature of the history in conjunction with what we were seeking to do and the way it worked together. I'm actually very excited about the investigation, which we'll be doing this Saturday. It may become my favorite. I'm not going to talk to you about it because I think we're hoping to get you in for a reading, and I don't want to contaminate that with any information ahead of time. But I'm really excited about our investigation this Saturday.
So I'm glad he brought that up, which I was wanting to ask you. We do have an investigation plan this Saturday. Would it be okay to give you another call this Saturday and do maybe a remote reading? Would that be a possibility?
Oh, absolutely, of course. You know, anytime that you guys need me, I will make myself available for you guys.
Well, this is going to be one of the neat things about going out with Alan. Is every time we go out, it's completely different. There is no formula. You know, if you watch the films that we've put together, they're the last thing they are is formulaic. Every time out, it's completely different. And this time out, this Saturday, is going to be again. It's going to be completely different from anything else that we've done. I'm very excited about it.
Now, do you guys have any other locations planned for the year? I mean, are you going to continue like a documentary series, or how are you guys going to work this off?
Oh, absolutely. We have. Go ahead, Ray. Go ahead.
I was about to say I'll go out with Off the Chain Paranormal anytime Alan asks me. I'm always happy to ride shotgun.
Speaking about future investigations, yeah, Ray has got one on the table, this one this weekend, for sure. But Ray's got, and I'm not going to say anything about that one. That one's got it's going to be one that we've never done before in that type of setting. We're just trying to get a date set up on that one right now. And,
I'll say this about that one, Alan. It's one that nobody's ever done. They have never had a group in there. And Christina, I need to brag a little bit on Off the Chain Paranormal, because I think Alan was being modest a minute ago. Alan's a wonderful person. He has a lot of really strong humility in a positive way. But the old state house that we went into back in December was actually, on a historical level, it's one of the most prestigious places in Arkansas. It is next to impossible to get in there. Off the chain, Alan, correct me if I'm wrong, but Off the Chain Paranormal was only the second paranormal group that's ever allowed in there. And the place has been there for hundreds of years. You know, so this is, and once again, I want to brag on Off the Chain Paranormal. I can do this because I'm Blind Man's Bluff. I'm a different entity. I can brag on them. But it is just becoming more and more of a prestigious, well-recognized, and very respected paranormal investigative group here in Arkansas. These are just the best of the best as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I'm going to have to agree. And Chase, let's get to you real quick before we forget. You know, so if the locations, you know, what place was your favorite?
Okay. Well, for me, that's a little bit more of a broad question now. As far as being part of the team and being based out of Arkansas, I'd say in Arkansas, my favorite location probably has to be the old hospital. Just for me personally, the fact that when I investigated that the first time, I really even wasn't a part of the team just yet. I was kind of going along, helping them do some things, and they were looking at me as being a possible member of me and my wife. And that was kind of one of the things that helped seal the deal and get me on the team and so forth. So it holds a special place in my heart as far as that goes. But also just some of the experiences we've had and the things that, you know, I believe are going on there, and it's just so rich, not only in history, but in activity. However, just in general locations, because we do, we are trying to branch out not only in Arkansas, but, you know, surrounding areas, things like that, as time and as everything, finances, how and so forth, but not being originally from Arkansas, I had a little bit broader perspective, and we've also done some locations in Tennessee. There was a hospital there we did that had some tremendous experiences with, and I'm hoping to get us back in there. And then there's a few other places I'd like to get us into, but I'd say as far as Arkansas goes, the old hospital is definitely my favorite.
Well, great. And so, Ray, as far as the documentary now, are the videos already out? Are they coming out? When can people expect them?
Oh, they're out. Everything we have. Let's see, we have the old hospital video, and that was our first, and it came out really good. We have the Rialto Theater, which was built in 1911 and still operates. We have that video out, and we also have the Lunatic Asylum Masquerade video out. We have the three videos out. There's a music video out, and hopefully within the next month or two, we'll have the old Statehouse video out, and immediately after that, I'll be producing what we're doing this weekend, I hope. So you can go to go to YouTube and just type in "This is Arkansas," and all of those are on our "This is Arkansas" YouTube channel. You can find them by typing in "Off the Chain Paranormal." You can type in "The Blind Filmmaker of Arkansas." A bunch of stuff pops up under my name, but you can go through it and find the Off the Chain videos pretty easy.
Nice, and we'll put the link up for those channels as well so that people can check them out. So are you, Ray, are you working on anything else? I know that you're obviously working on the documentary, but are you working on any other paranormal related stuff?
I tell you what, my all of the paranormal work that I do is wrapped up with Off the Chain Paranormal and Alan. It requires so much. I mean, it's the most labor and time intensive work that I've ever done production wise. But it's so enjoyable, and when it's done, getting to see and share it is rewarding to where I can't stop doing it. But I would not be able to work with another group and do what I would consider to be a satisfactory job with Off the Chain Paranormal. I mean, it's just, it is so involving. You know, it's like I said, these guys, this group is the best of the best here in Arkansas. And it's just, but the challenge, it's an enjoyable challenge to me to produce what they're doing and do my best to relay what's actually happening as we're filming. You know, it's just, it's very enjoyable.
Absolutely.
Christine, if we have a little time, there was one investigation that I did not get in. John and Chase do the Pittsburgh Hospital in Tennessee, and they did the, I believe it was a two-night investigation down there. And when they got back, they had some incredible stories to tell about that place, and their chains got rattled a little bit. If I'd like for them to touch on that, if they could, just a little bit.
Oh, of course.
Okay. Well, as far as that goes, myself, John, and my wife have gone. Unfortunately, Alan couldn't go. He had a family emergency that morning, which that's another thing, Christine, that seems to be really odd with us is it seems some of these locations that we try to get to either have to delay or certain things, or, you know, unfortunately, like being on your show, you know, we recently rescheduled due to some I guess you could say technical difficulties, and it wasn't anybody's fault, but it seems like when we're trying to do this stuff, there's always something there, like it's blocking us. And that's another thing we've come to find is the more we do this and the more locations we hit, there's like something there blocking us, almost trying to stop us from doing what we do. But anyway, getting back to South Pittsburgh, that was something going on with Alan and his family, and again, seemed like something put the block there. But I have to say the biggest few experiences there were my father had come along. He lives in Tennessee, and he's actually trying to start his own paranormal group. And he'd come along, and he's walking down the hallway, and we were it's kind of a T shape, and we were in the middle there. All of a sudden, he calls my name. He goes, "You got your recorder and everything?" I said, "Well, yeah." He goes, "Get over here." So I come over there, and he's just kind of pale and everything. He goes, "Something just ran through me." He said it was like it made this. He said, "I think I startled something." He's like, "It made a hissing sound and just came right through me." He goes, "Did you not hear it or anything?" I said, "No, we didn't hear anything." And anyway, he was cold to the touch. I had my laser thermometer and was taking temperatures, and I even took, you know, people's skin temperatures and so forth, and he was 20 degrees colder than everybody else. The rest of the night, he seemed tired. He was shivering, and there was no, there's a few rooms there you can actually stay and sleep in overnight, but they have little window units to keep the doors closed. It'll keep it cool. But for the rest of the building, there's no air, and this was in May, and it was warm and humid. And me and John are walking with him, and we're sweating. I mean, but the whole time he's shivering, and he's not one that gets cold very easily. And then there's another instance where we went up to, and I'm a little hesitant about this room. It's the old nursery where I guess when they delivered babies and so forth, that's where they put them and care for them. Well, we go in there. We were in there maybe a minute or two, and all of a sudden I just felt horrible. Just sick, was getting dizzy, felt nauseous, kind of clammy. I mean, I was just feeling bad, and I tried to hang in there for a couple more minutes, and then finally I was like, guys, I gotta get out of here. About that time, Dad said, he goes, and I was kind of telling him what's going on. He said, you know, I'm starting to feel bad too, so we get out. Well, when I go back and play my voice recorder, right when we sit in there, well, just a few seconds before I say I'm feeling bad, there's not quite a growl, sort of a groan, almost as if something is kind of like when you're annoyed at somebody, like, ugh, you know, but it was more like ugh, and it wasn't any of us, and it was a deeper voice than any of us could produce, and it was just the three of us in that little room, and John, I think, didn't you catch that on your recorder as well?
Yeah, it was a very, okay.
Yeah, so those instances were different. And also, I'd say the other thing is, and
and it was my wife who was affected. We had, and this was when we'd gone up to the third floor. But when we went up there, she got real sick, and was pretty much sick the rest of the night. In fact, she had to go back to our room and lay down. She really couldn't do much of anything after that. She just felt bad. And after talking to her about it, she said, you know, because I've talked to her about us going back and so forth and doing some more things. She said, honestly, I don't think I can go back. She said, in fact, just talking about it with you right now makes me sick. And ever since then, every time I've mentioned it or I've even kind of hinted at it with the guys, not really said anything, she just kind of turns pale and gets real nauseous and sick. And from what I've heard, and we've talked to some other groups that have gone there, and for whatever reason, it seems like one female in the group that's there gets targeted, and they just get really ill, have to go lay down, and they're pretty much down and out the rest of their stay.
Wow. That is crazy.
Yeah, it was. It's a pretty intense place. I'll be honest, I would even almost hesitate to call. But, you know, I would like to do a remote reading there, but at the same time, if you're having to decompress from the old hospital, this place is even more intense than that.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is what it is. We see what happens, and who knows? Again, it'd be interesting. I want to say, you know, to you, Alan, you know, you can, you know, thank you to you as well. I mean, you've been a great friend, and I feel so honored that, you know, all the people out there that in the field and that are psychics, that you chose to work with me and see how it would work out. I mean, I know when we first started, it was going to be just kind of like a trial run thing and see, and I never expected we would be continuing on and you'd still want to be working, you know, with me on these, but, you know, I appreciate your trust in me and my abilities as well.
Well, we're the honored ones. We really appreciate you, you know, taking the time to work with us, because, you know, you have a very hectic schedule. I mean, you're nationally known, and I'm sure that you have, you know, a lot of irons in the fire. And usually our investigations happen on either, you know, most of them are on Saturday night. So, you know, that's always the night that everybody likes to go out and enjoy themselves. But, you know, we're usually trying to crawl through dark hallways and basements and stuff like that. And we really, really appreciate you, you know, helping us. And like I said, you have been, it seems like with every location, it's just, it gets more incredible. You know, more and more things are happening, and with the remote viewing, and you know, it's just has opened up a new chapter. And like I said, I think it's something that I've never seen any other group do. I mean, like I said, when you see even on television and documentaries and stuff, all the psychic mediums are at the location, and they have all the luxury of being able to feel the residual energy, which you do not. You're talking to us via cell phone through an invisible, you know, airwave over 3,000 miles away. And that in itself is incredible. I can't seem to still wrap my mind around that at all.
Well, yeah, I'm glad that it's... Sorry?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, yeah, you've definitely been proven to be quite an asset to us, just in what you've brought to the table. And, yeah, I just want to say thank you, and we definitely look forward to working with you more in the future.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's been my pleasure working with you guys. It's been great. I look forward to more. So I guess the next one we have will be this next coming Saturday, so I'll be ready for that. And again, after we do that, you guys are always welcome to come back on the show, and we can discuss again the information I picked up and see if it's, you know, still stay accurate, or where I'm off, or how it goes.
And Ray, correct me if I'm wrong, don't you have Christina actually talking and verifying some of these points in your videos?
Yes, I do. With the Lunatic Asylum mass grave, I was able to capture her entire reading on video, and I was using one of my upper-end mics so you don't have any of the noise contamination. It's a real good recording, both video and audio, and I was able to do the same thing at the old State House, too. So when we have that video finished, it will have the entirety of her reading in it, in a way that will also demonstrate the accuracy of what she's reading on a video basis.
All right. Well, again, I look forward to, you know, working with you guys. Again, I will be in touch with you, Alan, so that we can set up for Saturday. And again, then we'll have you guys back on once it's all completed. Again, thank you all, guys, for coming on tonight. I really appreciate you coming on. I look forward to having you come back and working with you some more in the future.
Yes, ma'am.
I sure appreciate it. You take care of yourself.
Definitely. For those don't know, I'm currently hospitalized, so I'm doing my show from my hospital room. So hearing background noise, that's what it was. But thanks so much for coming on the show. Everybody, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I look forward to talking to you all next week. And make sure to check out mine and Renee Chavez's show, Top Secret News, formerly was Alien UFOs and Beyond, Thursday night on the PRN Top Radio Network. This is Christina George signing out from Paranormal Connections tonight, and I will see you next week. Good night, everyone. Have a great week. Good night, guys.
Good night.
Thank you, Christina.
Good night.
You're very welcome. Later. Thank you. Okay. All right, guys. Thank you so very much. I appreciate you guys coming on the show tonight. I'm sorry I had to reschedule last time, and I know, Alan, you know, thanks for being considerate and, you know, telling me it was okay to reschedule again and thinking about my health first, but I didn't want to do that twice, so I'm glad that we were able to knock it out.
Oh, yeah. Your health is very important.
Yeah, that's why I said technical difficulties, because I didn't want to put you out there.
Yeah.
That's your thing, we certainly do appreciate it. And hey, all that stuff that comes first, and we're still here, and we'll do whatever we need to work with you and work around your schedule.
Well, great. You guys are awesome, and I look forward to, you know, just going forward in the future. We got lots of stuff that we can still do.
Oh, yes.
All right, guys. Well, I will talk to you and all on Saturday. And Alan, just a private message, just let me know like what time and all of that. And send me a picture of whatever you have.
I think you might be gone, but we'll let him know.
We'll message you, and we'll get everything set up.
Perfect. Thanks so much, guys.
Take it easy.
Take care.
All right. Good night.
You there, Freddy girl?
Yeah.
Yeah, y'all are pretty good. I'll put some music on in a minute once I get you off. Let me make